You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
774 ABC Melbourne. You're with me, Raphael Epstein. Let's welcome to the program Josh Nelson. Hi there, Josh.
Good to be back.
You can you can read and peruse Josh's musings at filmology.com. That's filmology with a PH. Where's the name coming from? Is it combination film and philosophy?
That'll do, yeah. I think the filmology with an F had been taken into domain name. Right, so okay. You can also listen in.
You can. I retweet your sessions that you do on another radio station whose name often slips out on this radio station, but it's kind of practice to not.
They're
not
all
go
on
down
there.
That path. They're,
the whole
they're
archive.
All on there. Just look for filmology.com. There's a pretty healthy community radio scene in the city. Let's leave it at that. So, Josh, we've got a few, including always got a week doesn't go by when we don't seem to have a superhero action film. We'll get to that in a moment. I think I would like to hear from people. Favorite comic book turned into film? We might have been down that path a few times, but you're an educated audience. If you've got a favorite comic book converted into a film, we'll tell you the one we're going to have a look at in a moment. But favorite cartoon, comic, anything really, TV series even turned into a movie? 1300 222 774. That's the phone number, and 0437 774 774. But Josh, let's start with Hail. What is Hail? Getting rave reviews. And should it get rave reviews?
It should, and it should be playing at more than the one cinema in Melbourne that it is playing at. It's playing at the Cinema Nova in Carlton. This is a film from an Australian director, Emile Corton-Wilson, who was in my year level, actually, at university.
Although
we hung in very different kind of crowds at the time.
He owes you. He owes it all to you.
Which I regret now, unfortunately, because he's rising. He's going from strength to strength. Look, his last couple of features have been documentaries, one called Bastardy and another called Catch My Disease, which was about Ben Lee. It shows a kind of transition from documentary filmmaking into sort of fiction film, pseudo-fiction. It's based on the life of Danny P. Jones, who's who's been in and out of jail his whole life, drug addicted, etc. And he plays himself. He plays a character called Danny, who we see at the beginning of the film get out of jail, reacquaints himself with an ex-flame and starts to try and integrate himself back into society. And of course, we see the prejudices. And more than that, we see the kind of the demons, the violence that's brewing inside of him sort of slowly re-emerge.
And presumably a lot of these things have actually happened to you.
Well, yeah, the film is based on basically his stories that he's told Emile over the journey. I think they've been friends for quite some time. Remarkable film in a number of ways. One is the way in which it blends this idea of sort of the documentary and the fiction, but also in terms of style. It opens with a really strong sort of social realist style. A lot of handheld camera work, a lot of extreme sort of close-ups, and we get the grittiness. I mean, I really hate it when people criticise Australian film for doing the gritty stuff. But when it's done well like it is here, it's a worthwhile experience.
Is that what a docudrama is?
Look, I think typically I consider docudrama more the sort of the reenactment kind of...
Okay. Which is more a fictionalised account of
I mean, yeah, it doesn't rely on the fact that it's truthful or it's based on previous experiences to function as a film. But there's a number of other levels here, which is really curious. The film actually opens with an image of a painting, which I think... I should have tried to check this out, but I think it's of Thor. I think it's a Norse image. And the filmmaker plays on this idea of Danny as a kind of a god or having this sort of biblical violence. And so much of the imagery in this film, these cutaways or these scenes, draw on images of water, of hail, like the title of the film, snow, fire, earth, you know. So we get this sense that Danny is this sort of almost this force of nature, and
right.
It's this sense of nature is going to wreak its vengeance towards the end of the film. It's quite stunning, and as the film moves on, we get more and more away from the social realist opening to almost experimental style filmmaking that I think is supposed to reflect the interior of what's going on in his mind. So
okay. In
the early scenes, we get these cutaways to Danny standing in a field or standing at the ocean, these very peaceful scenes. And then gradually those sort of cutaways become more and more chaotic. This is it's a really challenging film in some regards. It's not, it's I guess unrelenting in some ways, but there is a sparseness there as well, but incredibly rewarding, incredibly artistic. I think this guy's a really promising filmmaker that we should be embracing. And look, I think it's the only sad thing about this film is, like I said, it's only playing in one cinema in Melbourne, but I really recommend people get along and check this out.
So it includes a story arc, and what as the film progresses, you are more and more exposed to what might be called the sort of subconscious viewpoint of the main character. Is that right?
Well, yeah, in a sense. I mean, the first sort of section or two sections of the film is really dominated by Danny and his relationship with this other woman and his attempts to find some semblance of normality in a kind of post post-incarcerated life. And then there's something happens, and then that sort of springboards the sort of the final act of the film when the chaos kind of emerges. But I don't want to give people the impression that this is a super violent film. It's not. When we've talked about things like Savages in previous weeks, the violence is handled in a really deft manner. So much of the violence in the early stages of the film is sort of just under the surface, or it's drowned out through silence or through music. And so the violence really only emerges, you know, get a raw detail in the latter stages of the film. It's a really clever film. I mean, this is, I think, it blends styles. It blends, the idea of truth or, you know, the docu-fiction stuff nicely. I think it's a powerful film and, really quite rewarding.
Do you know if he's gilded the lily at all? Has he needed to sort of, take the rough edges off at all?
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, there's some things that happen in the film which obviously can't have been kind of happened in reality. Yeah. But I think it's sort of almost a combination of stories that Danny has told Emil or has actually happened or that he's experienced. But it works as almost a fictionalized account of that ex-con trying to kind of, you know, reinsert himself into society and just as a kind of a beautiful art film as well.
Okay, so that is called Hail, as in hail like rain?
Yeah, absolutely.
And only on at Nova and Carlton at the moment?
That's it, yep.
See if Josh can get it pushed onto other venues. Sounds like he likes it. And look, I've seen a few divided reviews. But still, Josh likes it. Go along, check it out. I mentioned superhero or cartoons turned into movies. If you've got a favourite, 1300-222-774. I remember the first time I saw Spider-Man actually just going, oh, wow. But then they just kept on getting better and better. But this Josh, is a... This is pretty much a niche comic book. There aren't heaps, or there were not for a very long time, very many Judge Dredd fans out there. There is a terrible Sylvester Stallone, yes. Sandra Bullock, diabolically bad. Wesley Snipes, just everything that's bad with Hollywood remake. What's that, 12, 14 years old?
At least. And Stallone uttering in his kind of garbled dialect that, I am the law. It gets replayed for years and years. This awful one-liner.
Oh, look, it's dreadful. But look, Judge Dredd is a pretty gritty, using the word gritty a lot, but a pretty gritty, underground-ish type British comic book. And they've used a Kiwi. Someone who started life on Shortland Street. How many great actors have started life on Shortland Street? Carl Urban is Dredd, Judge Dredd. How does this one stack up?
Yeah, Carl Urban, not Keith Urban.
Sorry, did I say Keith?
No, you didn't. You said Carl. I think I've said Keith in other scenarios. So it's definitely not Keith Urban. Carl Urban. Look, this is much better than the Stallone one, although that wouldn't be hard. Look, this version of Dredd is basically RoboCop mixed with The Raid, the Indonesian action film that we talked about.
I've never seen.
You've got to check it out.
I've seen that in the DVD store. I've got to check it out. Yeah.
So it's a simple premise. I mean, this really is, it's an ultra-violent comic. I was never really a fan of Dredd. In fact, I think I was put off by the Stallone film. But it's had a number of really interesting revivals in recent times with some quality artists and authors. Like Grant Morrison, who's done a great run of Batman, has done some recent editions, I think. Look, it's basically, you know, Judge Dredd, the ultra-violent cop in this futuristic post-apocalyptic society. The city is called Mega City One. It houses something like 800 million people. They end up in this one of these massive, 400-story apartment blocks, which is ruled by a drug lord who has released a new drug on the market called Slow-Mo, which allows its victims or its addicts to experience the world in a really slow kind of pace, and then basically get locked in. And the woman, the drug lord, played by Lena Headey, who people will know from Game of Thrones or the Sarah Connor.
Which character is she from Game of Thrones?
She's the mother of Joffrey. So that's, I always get the
name
wrong.
Oh, okay. So she's the blonde baddie.
Yeah, who's doing interesting things with her
brother.
Indeed.
Oh, okay. So she's the baddie in this.
She's
as well.
The evil drug lord who rules the apartment building and basically locks the doors and says, if you want to continue with my protection and get the drugs, then you've got to off the cop. And his, of course, rookie sidekick who happens to be a psychic. She's a psychic as well as his sidekick. Yeah. This is very much an 80s B-grade action film. The one distinguishing feature of this film is its violence, and the violence is incredibly brutal.
Oh right.
Like slow motion, because they use the gimmick of the slow-mo drugs to capture, you know, rupturing heads and kind of splatter. And of course, the 3D makes grotesque use of the blood sort of slowly coming out.
It's in 3D as well.
Yeah, this is another one.
You can watch heads exploding on an IMAX screen in 3D.
In slow motion, yeah.
Marvellous. Marvellous what they can do with film.
But the unfortunate, I think, in terms of the action, which is quite well orchestrated, if you're into the sort of the mindless violence, shoot 'em up, the problem is that the script is really weak, and the script is the only really sort of known creative head in this, which is Alex Garland, who wrote
The Beach.
The Beach.
He's all downhill for him.
But he's also written a couple of, well, I might offend a few people here, but the 28 Days Later script isn't the best, and his film
28
Sunshine.
28 Days Later was great.
The first two thirds are great. The script falls away noticeably, I think, in the latter stages.
Yeah. Still fun.
Anyway, this is a really kind of average script, which is a shame because I think Carl Urban is quite impressive, and they stick to the, and this is not really giving anything away, they stick to him keeping the helmet on.
Yes.
So he doesn't have the, like, the Stallone ego removing the helmet at some page. I think he did from memory in that film. But look, this will
appear pretty hard to act with a helmet and a visor over your nose and face.
Yeah, he does a reasonable job. I mean, the problem is his voice just sounds like Peter Weller in RoboCop, and the whole thing is very much. I mean, he even has the comments apart from the "I am the law." The comments that the police have, the sort of their objectives and so on.
So it's not really much talk.
Well, it's not as exhilarating as The Raid, and it doesn't have the kind of satire of the futuristic, consumer-driven society RoboCop did. So it fails with both of its two most obvious sort of cultural references. But look, it's still a bit of a ride. I've known some people who've said this is the best brainless film they've seen all year. So I'm not sure, take that with a grain of salt. But
I'm all for the brainless popcorn films. There's nothing wrong with them. And I have read that it's, I don't know how to say this without sounding stupid, it's quite realistic in that its costumes and the sets are quite, they look real, even though it's obviously a ridiculous future world. It actually looks quite, street ready and real.
Yeah, it's gritty. I mean, they play up the grittiness of it. It isn't the garish reds and yellows that the Stallone 90s version had. I think it was a budget of, I was going to say only, $45 million, but compared to, $300 million for Transformers, yes. They do a reasonable job with the budget. I think the visual effects are quite good. It captures the sense of the post-apocalyptic society quite well, the interiors of the apartment
All
block.
I'm hearing is catch it on DVD. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, I think it'll lose a lot on DVD. I think if you're going to watch it, see it on the big screen with the, with the blood splatters right in your face.
Okay, fair enough. Look, it's coming up to 10 minutes to 6 on 774 ABC Melbourne. Josh Nelson is with me. I'd love to hear your favourite comic book made into film. I don't actually have a favourite. Oh, no, I do. Watchmen. Watchmen is without a doubt my favourite comic book turned into a film. You might have one of your own, 1300 222 774. I've just offended our film aficionado, but there you go. We'll get to that in a moment. Someone has texted in. I'll ask Josh this question because I'm interested to know. There can be only one answer, I think, to this question. But, Josh, what does Josh think about Disney making three new Star Wars films?
God.
Is there anything redeeming we can say?
The Twitterverse all week is just all that's been talking about, apart from the break for the, that event in the US that something
that
happened.
Yeah, that small minor thing, yes.
I don't know. I don't think you could do them any worse than the last three that George Lucas did.
Never say never, Josh. Never say never. You could make a lot worse.
Couldn't they do like a sort of a Pixar tie-in, a bit of Toy Story as Star Wars? Like the Lego craze, the Lego doing Lego Star Wars and Lego Harry Potter.
It's all summed up for me in the Mickey Mouse that had Darth Vader head.
Yep.
I just thought, how on earth do you unify?
Well, I'm worried because Harrison Ford said, I'll do it. I'll
terrifying.
Be a very old Han Solo. But after his very old Indiana Jones, I'm not sure I want that.
No, I don't. It just sort of ruins all those cherished childhood memories that I have. Tell me about this one. I don't know if the bodysuit is real or not. I did a quick Google. I don't think it is. There's a lot of nudity from Helen Hunt. She's 49. People might remember from Mad About You. And she won an Oscar for, what was that one with Jack Nicholson? Terrible film. Rubbish film. Anyway, she's in a film called The Sessions.
As Good As It Gets, sorry.
As Good As It Gets. Right. Horrible film. Tell me about The Sessions.
Look, I only walked out of this I walked out after it finished about half an hour ago. So this is still, I'm still kind of mulling it over what I think. This is a feel-good film. And it's very much that trope that Hollywood likes to play out, the disability narrative in the sort of sweet sense of the word. It's based on a true story about a San Francisco poet. I think his name is Mark O'Brien. Whose body has sort of been racked by polio, so he's basically bedridden and forced to spend most of his life in an iron lung. who decides at the age of almost 40 or just over 40 that he wants to lose his virginity. So that's really what the sessions is about. It's about him having these sessions with a sex therapist played by Helen Hunt. And the other sessions, I guess, that the film title refers to is those with the priest, his priest sort of friend, played by William H. Macy. And I should say that the lead character is played by John Hawkes, who has pretty much been isolated to bit parts and cameos in a lot of the cinema that he's been in. So it's really nice to see him get a meaty role, because I think he's quite a talented character actor in Hollywood, and he does a great job. The real, I think, recommendation for this film is the performances of the three leads. John Hawkes is pretty exceptional in the lead role, but also Helen Hunt, who has sort of been absent, I think. I mean, I can't think of too many films since As Good As It Gets. You know, I think she's been a bit of a victim of the, once you pass 40 in Hollywood,
yeah, right,
you're, you know, there's just
over the hill.
Yeah, and there's not too many scripts unless you get to, you either, they're taken by Judi Dench,
yeah,
or
right,
they're given to the 20-year-old sort of Playboy bunny.
Yeah.
But there's a sense of vulnerability in this film, in the way those relationships play out. And, of course, the central emotional conflict is that Helen Hunt begins to become emotionally involved and he becomes emotionally involved. And that's that therapist-client, you know, patient relationship.
Did you like it?
Look, I did overall. It's touching. I think
not too sappy?
No, it holds back. I mean, it's a fairly simple, straightforward film. There's not a lot of you know, ingenuity or complexity with the way it pans out. But the performances are strong. The interesting thing I noticed in terms of the nudity is that the camera focuses on Helen Hunt's nudity, but we never see John Hawkes nude.
Yeah, right.
So it's a confusing thing, given that so much of the film is supposed to be about his body and his sort of sexual awakening, and yet the film really only seems interesting in sexualizing the Helen Hunt character. So I think it's sort of, you know, it pulls its punches in that regard. I think it would have been a far more interesting film if it had played on the nature of his body, because in some senses the film demystifies the relationship between sexuality and sin because of the relationship of the priest character to him. And he's a devout Catholic, the bedridden guy, but also demystifies sexuality and disability. And it reminded me in some ways of this fantastic doco that came out a couple of years ago. I think it's called Scarlet Road, A Sex Worker's Journey, which is about a Sydney-based sex worker who basically specializes in clients who have physical and mental handicaps,
right,
or disability.
Okay.
And that's a remarkable documentary.
Scarlet Road.
Scarlet Road, I think that's what it's called. Okay. I mean, this just sort of occurred to me then, but I think this film has a similar sort of function in many regards. It does demystify those points to a degree, but then it seems to
the Hollywood cop-out.
Yeah, I think that is. I think it's pulled its punches because of the Hollywood appeal, and that, you know, showing full frontal male nudity is such a taboo. I mean, that's almost a guarantee of an R rating, but it's fine. There's that double standard. It's fine to show female nudity, and, you know, you can sexualize a female character, but you can't sexualize a male character who is disabled. I thought that would have been a far more radical gesture, and it would have made the film far more interesting. But, you know, it's still worthwhile for the performances without that other sort of stuff, I think.
Okay. And look, I think both the sessions and Dread are both widely available, aren't they?
They are, yep.
Yeah. Okay. Look, Josh, thank you very much. And Scarlet Road probably is the name of that doco about the sex worker.
I think it's called Scarlet Road, yeah.
Okay. Josh Nelson, you can check out his film blog, filmology.com. That is, of course, spelt with a P-H.